Welcome to the Washington Independent Review of Books podcast. I'm Susan Storer Clark, and today we'll be talking to Rebecca Dinerstein, whose debut novel, The Sunlit Night, is set in Lofoten, Norway. That's a group of islands north of the Arctic Circle. The novel's action takes place mostly between the end of May and the middle of July, and that's a time when the sun does not set. Two young people from New York City journey there independently. Frances, an art student from Manhattan, who flees a broken romance and family dysfunction. And Yasha, who comes to fulfill his father's wish to be buried at the top of the world. Welcome to the Washington Independent Review of Books podcast, Rebecca.
Thanks so much. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Good. Lofoten seems like a magical place in your novel, but it is a real place, and it's one where you've spent considerable time writing poetry and fiction. I have to ask you, does it seem magical to you?
Absolutely. I really can't think of a more magical place on our planet. I mean, it feels and quite simply is the edge of the Earth. It's some of the northernmost land that people live on. And it's truly spectacular. It's a landscape straight out of our wildest imagination.
Well, I've only visited Lofoten on the internet, but it looks spectacular. There are these sudden mountains coming up out of the sea. Is that a reasonable description?
Yes, it's completely extraordinary. These mountains, I'd never seen mountains like them. They're asymmetrical. They have many, many peaks and ridges. They look like creatures to me. And they're not only coming up out of the sea, they're coming up out of the fjords. So the balance between that turquoise fjord water, which really looks tropical, even though it's in the Arctic, and these sudden, enormous, extraordinary mountains is really astonishing.
Now, you've also published a bilingual English-Norwegian book of poetry. And what attracted you, you're a young woman from Manhattan, to Norway and Norwegian culture?
It's a great question, and there was a lot of serendipity involved. But essentially, when I graduated college, I had just completed a pretty hectic, crowded, and largely indoor library-based couple of years, and I was given a poetry fellowship that allowed me to choose somewhere where I'd settle down and write a book of poems. And I thought, this is such an extraordinary opportunity. I'd like to go somewhere really ravishing and strange. And Norway really values its natural landscape. It's a culture that puts nature first. And you're outdoors most of the day, and the air is incredibly clean. And there's this kind of simple, wide open spaciousness that I'd really never felt in Manhattan. And it let me relax, it inspired me, and it, I think, kept me healthy while I did a lot of work.
Now, there's also a Viking museum in the real Lofoten. There's one in your book, but you say in your notes that the one in your book is fictitious. It's not meant to resemble the real one. Now, my first reaction, I have to say, is really, how different could two Viking museums in northern Norway be? But how are they different?
There is a wonderful Viking museum at Borg in Lofoten. It's a real place that I visited and enjoyed. However, the most noticeable features of the museum, as it appears in my book, namely this grand sculpture of Yggdrasil, which is the mythological tree of life, and more importantly, the cavern under it, where I won't give away what happens, but becomes kind of central to the book. None of that is at the museum. There's also no barn that's being painted. There's no funeral space. I mean, much of what takes place in the book at the museum is completely fictitious. So it really wasn't an accurate portrayal of their services or facilities. Okay. But, you know, it is a fantastic real place that's well worth a visit.
Okay. Now, one of the main characters in your book is Yasha. He's a young man who has grown up in Brooklyn, and he is there with his father's body because his father wanted to be buried at the top of the world. Now, his story is that he and his father left Russia when Yasha was a very young man, and they opened a bakery in Brighton Beach in Brooklyn. And Yasha's mother was supposed to come with them. She didn't. She doesn't get in touch with her son for many years. Have you heard stories like this from Russian immigrants?
That's another really good question. I haven't heard that story exactly. What I did gather from the Russian friends in my life were smaller details like Septimos, the cat who purrs in musical sevenths, was based on a real Russian cat, and the atmosphere of Brighton Beach and those Russian bakeries were very important to me as I grew up. My grandmother used to live in Brighton Beach, so that atmosphere came to me very quickly when I started writing this piece. But the specific story of Yasha's mother, I invented, and I hope very much that few real Yashas out there have experienced it.
I hope so too. Now, Frances, the art student from Manhattan, is she sort of like you? Her father described her when she was little as a dark, serious baby. Now, that's a pretty unusual description for a baby. Did somebody describe you that way?
I don't know. That phrase has stuck with me since my childhood, and I'm not sure whether it was said about me or even who said it, but it's an idea of a kind of child that I've always thought about. And as regards to the larger question, I think it's similar to the Viking Museum answer. I am from Manhattan and I went to Norway, but there was never any Yasha and there was never any Yellow Room, and all the things that fill Francis's day never filled mine. So ultimately we're very, very different, even though I'm glad that Francis was able to express some of what I, as a writer, really admired about that landscape and that geography.
Yeah. Now, there is in this book, it's an improvised burial service, basically, for Yasha's father. And I think a lot of people improvise funeral and memorial services these days. But this one, that scene was wonderful, I have to say. It's touching, it's funny, it's awkward. It rings absolutely true, I think, both to the situation.
Thank you so much.
And the characters. And was that an easy scene for you to write, or did you struggle with it?
You know, that was actually the first scene I wrote in the book. That's the oldest scene in the book. It came to me on my first train ride north. As I was on the train heading up to the Arctic, I had this image of that northern light on a casket, and that was really the starting point of the whole story. I already had the characters of Yasha and his father, and I already had the situation of the missing mother and this idea of a funeral, but it was really that early imagery that provided the foundation for the rest of the book.
Well, it is very powerful, and I have to say, at least for me, it worked.
Thanks so much.
Yasha's father wanted to be buried at the top of the world, not because he'd ever been there, which is kind of interesting, but because he admired a hunter, a Sami named Omot, who had taught his father, Yasha's father's father, to shoot. Now, Yasha's father never shot a reindeer himself. He never visited above the Arctic Circle, but, you know, so many of us are attracted to a myth that has little to do with our real lives. So how did this character, this situation, come to you?
You know, I think Brooklyn, after Russia, felt so miscellaneous and so unhomelike to Yasha's father that at a certain point he stopped trusting his own location and really kind of got carried away with the idea of what if and where could I be, because he had already lost his original home, the home that made sense. So I think he stopped thinking of Brooklyn as the place he was supposed to be and started trying to imagine where else he could go. And that's when the images from your childhood and the people who inspire you and the lessons that have meant the most to you kind of pop back up in your mind and get you thinking about faraway places. So that's kind of the idea of where can I be, where can I go, is what I was trying to figure out with Yasha's father, who's a very silly and imaginative man.
Mm-hmm. What's next for you? What are you working on now?
I'm starting another novel. I don't want to go into too much detail, but I'm trying to take a look at the history of poison and how human beings ever figured out which of these crazy berries we can eat and which are going to kill us, and also how that kind of relates to human desire and our relationship to the forbidden. I'm just kind of trying to figure all that out.
Wonderful. That sounds terrific. Well, I hope you enjoy writing it.
Thanks so much, Susan.
We have been talking with Rebecca Dinerstein. She is the author. Her debut novel is The Sunlit Night. Thank you very much, Rebecca, for talking to us today.
Thanks, Susan. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you, the listener, for joining us on the Washington Independent Review of Books podcast. I'm Susan Storer-Clark.